Hello and welcome to another episode of the Brexit Podcast. I'm your host Jennifer Han, and in January, Birmingham City University launched the world's first and only Centre for Brexit Studies. So for today's episode, we brought on the Centre's head and the Director of Research at BCU's Business School, Alex de Ruyter, to give us his take on what academia can add to the Brexit debate. We discussed the importance of inter- and multidisciplinary study of a subject as multifaceted as Brexit and how the Centre hopes to work with government, businesses, as well as ordinary citizens to share their research and insights. If you're interested in this more academic view of Brexit, you should also tune in to our next episode in which we will be talking to Robert Lawson, who's a lecturer and course director at BCU's School of English and responsible for the linguistic vein of the Centre for Brexit Studies. If you want to catch that episode as well, you should subscribe to us wherever you're listening to this podcast so you'll get it sent straight to your phone. You can also find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast.
Hi, Alex. Welcome to the Brexit Podcast.
Hello, Jennifer. Thank you.
To start off with, you must be incredibly busy right now. What with the decision coming in yesterday with the House of Lords?
Yes, I mean, it's been quite a sort of frenetic volume of activity for us ever since we launched the centre properly, yes.
So could you, for our listeners that might not know about it properly, could you explain a bit about what the centre is, how the idea came about?
Well, the Centre for Brexit Studies idea came about in obviously in response to the referendum on June the 23rd last year and result. Because the decision around Brexit, for us, Brexit is a complex phenomenon. I mean, it can be very simply portrayed in terms of the vote result, but Brexit doesn't just have business and economic impacts. It also impacts on the legal system, social cohesion, politics, how we deal with the rest of the world, and indeed environmental issues, for example. So for us, Brexit could not really just be analysed through any one subject area. You know, it extends beyond business and economics into law, politics, sociology, and other subject areas as well. You know, you think if you look at the impact on the manufacturing sector, you're then talking about, in engineering disciplines and so on as well. So the centre idea then came about so that we could come together as a group of academics and researchers to collaborate and actually, bring our various different perspectives.
Do you think there's sort of been a downplaying of how multifaceted this whole issue is in the media, with so much of it focusing on the economic impact and things like that? I mean, I know that you're yourself a business professor, so I don't know whether you think that's a good thing or...
I think it's important to move beyond just to focus on business and the economy. I think certainly it's a key focus in terms of the centre here. We have a particular interest in the impact on the region, being based in Birmingham, so understanding the impact particularly on the West Midlands, as that's our sort of stakeholder base. But obviously with interest in the impact on the UK in general. But no, one does need to move beyond just to focus on business and the economy because Brexit, of course, on one level, people say it was a vote against migration or a vote to take back control. I think for us it's very important to clear up misconceptions around the nature of the vote because in order to develop a better understanding of why people vote the way they did and therefore come up with solutions for policymakers and society in general, that means having a good focus on issues relating to the law, issues relating to social cohesion. If you take Birmingham as an example, Birmingham is one of the most ethnically diverse cities in the world. For us, it's vitally important that going forward, we ensure that we maintain a sense of civic identity that is open and inclusive.
Alex, it's Tim here. How many people have you got in your department?
Well, the centre is a research centre that's initially housed in the Faculty of Business, Law and Social Science. So we have about 20 people actively collaborating at the moment across those different subject areas.
And in terms of the specific pillars that you're focusing on right now, can you enlighten us with some interesting stuff?
We're certainly trying to understand the impact, as I said earlier, on the region, the West Midlands region. We're trying to get to grips with the impact of you know, the implications of the vote on the manufacturing sector. One of the things we're particularly trying to argue is that whilst there's a focus out there on trying to negotiate new trade agreements, you can't have a trade agreement unless you have trade, and you can't have effective trade unless you've got good infrastructure. So we're certainly, you know, we released a report recently called Making a Success of Brexit, which is about understanding the impact on the West Midlands region and coming up with proposals for policymakers. That's been very widely picked up by MPs and had a lot of debate in Westminster circles. But in that sense, we are the first region in England to come up with a blueprint of how to go forward in a post-Brexit environment. Mm. So that's one area. We also have people working in American legal studies trying to understand the nature of the vote with Donald Trump becoming president and trying to analyse some of his actions. So that's quite topical as well. We also have people trying to understand issues around hate crime and the reported rise in hate crime incidences post-Brexit. In that sense, we are trying to work on developing research that looks at what is English identity and trying to understand that in terms of being open and inclusive.
You talked about the blueprint there that was discussed in Westminster. Can you give us the key tenets to that?
The key recommendations arising out of that report, as I said, you know, relate to you need to focus on what countries are we developing trade with. Perhaps surprisingly for some people, the largest export market for the West Midlands is the United States. So that you know, we see potentially opportunities to grow trade with the United States, given the manufacturing profile of the region and its significance in terms of automotive and aerospace, for example.
Yeah, I was going to ask what specific products the West Midlands actually export over to.
Well, it's in terms of the supply chain. So, you know, we look at cars and companies like Jaguar Land Rover, for example.
Mm. Excellent.
And of course, aerospace industry, you know, feeding into the US in that regard.
Mm. Now, you launched the centre in January with a free conference that explored Brexit's challenges for business and society. Could you give us some of the key takeaways from that day?
Yes, the keynote speakers we had, I presented in the morning, you know, presenting our report, Making a Success of Brexit. So some of that was specific to the region in terms of arguing for better infrastructure. You know, we argue that the region is deficient in terms of its rail and road connections and also in terms of its IT infrastructure and broadband. We also argue that given the nature of the Supreme Court judgment on the devolved nations of the UK being in effect treated as regions, we are arguing that regions such as the West Midlands in England should be given a new funding settlement. So that's linking in terms to the devolution agenda around the creation of metro mayors and what we have in the West Midlands here called the West Midlands Combined Authority. Essentially, you know, we're trying to argue the case that manufacturing is important to the UK economy and perhaps more important than financial services. So there's a clear need to ensure that going forward, any agreement we negotiate with the European Union works to our best interest in preserving that vitality in the manufacturing sector. We also argued that part of the issue facing the West Midlands region in terms of identifying, for example, skills gap and lack of infrastructure, in a sense, has been a result of the success of the region. You know, it's been the most dynamic, export-oriented region in the UK, you know, in recent years in that regard. So for us, there's a clear need to preserve that manufacturing status, of course, with, you know, current conversations around car companies and will they stay, will they go. We certainly need to impress the importance there of ensuring that the UK's significant status in the car industry, you know, is maintained.
Mm. And one of your key aims in the centre is to promote engagement of both Leave and Remain standpoints. I think that's something that everyone, including the media, has been grappling with quite a lot and trying to somehow be balanced there. How can you put that into practice and how can you really ensure that?
Well, The centre is an academic centre, and therefore it serves to provide a platform for discussion and debate for those of both a leave and remain perspective. I mean, its primary function is being that of a research centre, and therefore what we try and ensure is that analysis and conversation, whilst people have, you know, clearly expressed a view in that regard, is evidence-based and objective in its presentation.
Alex, are you concerned that your own funding will dry up as we move out of the European Union?
No, I think in terms of the timeline going forward for Brexit, I think this process will take quite a few years. I must stress, you know, as a university research centre, you know, the funding in that regard that we would be looking to receive, being early days, you know, would come through the obvious sources such as government research funding councils and charitable foundations and the like. But in terms of the agenda of the centre going forward, I think we have quite a few years left to run. And I think one of the key things that we are discovering in this this whole panoply of problems that we face is that governments simply lack the capacity to undertake much analysis related to understanding the impact of Brexit, given the sort of focus on austerity and spending cuts we've seen in recent years. The capacity of the civil service to undertake this kind of extended analysis has been a bit limited, and therefore we see clear opportunities here in terms of helping government and industry in that regard. For example, we are developing a postgraduate certificate in trade policy and management whereby we are working directly with partners in chambers of commerce and contacts in the Department of Industry and Trade to develop a product that would be uniquely focused on providing small and medium-sized enterprises, for example, with a basic understanding of trade issues, which of course also includes the legal environment.
You feel you're leading the way in this sector?
Yes, we do. I think one of the things that we found quite advantageous for us is because we've been able to get people across different subject areas together very quickly under a multidisciplinary label. You know, to the best of my understanding, we are the first centre of its type in the world to focus on all the issues related to Brexit and bringing them together. And I think that gives us a really good position from which to explore, you know, novel approaches to understanding problems from different perspectives. You know, if you take trade, for example, trade's got a clear legal element to it. Trade even has an ethical element to it in terms of, you know, the focus now on understanding the supply chain and ensuring we have ethical sourcing.
You touched briefly there about charitable investment and having a look through some of the research stuff that we've done here. It says 249 charities gained over £217 million of funding in 2014 from the EU. And charity leaders feel there's a real risk that this might dry up once we exit, once Brexit takes full hold. Is this an area that you're looking at? Probably not one that's given much thought through the wider public, but could be obviously one of massive concerns for charities. Is it something that you're investigating?
Yes. I mean, we're developing a research stream around social enterprise in the third sector that will touch on those issues. You know, for us, it's still early days in that regard. But clearly, you know, you've highlighted an issue there relating to the funding that the EU has traditionally, you know, dispersed around the regions, and then the need to ensure that going forward that you know, we maintain some kind of parity there in terms of UK government support, you know, whether it's the charities, as you mentioned there, or indeed for universities and higher education. Of course, you know, the EU Horizon 2020 pot of money for research funding is a significant one, and the UK has been a clear beneficiary of that. So, you know, there's a need to impress on government the importance of ensuring that these sources of money, if you like, are kept going forward in some alternative format of disbursement, yeah.
Yeah, and have you got a view currently on Trump and whether he's good for Brexit?
Oh, I think, you know, he's certainly a controversial individual in those respects, as, you know, people might see him. I look at the vote on Trump, and I would say, you know, you could well interpret that as a backlash against globalisation, and just as you could well interpret the Brexit vote as a backlash against globalisation, you know, for those who might have felt they've been left behind, for example.
Mm. to finish off with, you mentioned earlier that BCU is mainly for academics and students, but I read on your website that you're also aiming to provide space for collaboration with businesses and civil society in general. Has this already happened, and what does that look like?
Well, I'll give you again the example there of developing the postgraduate certificate in trade policy and management is directly oriented at working with partners in chambers of commerce. And so, you know, through that would be aimed at a business audience.
What about general civil society? How would you want them to get involved?
Well, we run a series of regular monthly seminars, for example, and, you know, we invite speakers from various areas, be they politicians or public figures. For example, we have Tim Farron coming to talk on March the 9th. So, you know, we're developing a platform in that regard for open and public debate. And through those regular seminars, whether it's an academic or a politician or a business leader speaking, then that's how we try and reach out to a wider audience.
What interest have you seen kind of from wider society since you launched the centre, and whether that surprised you or not, or whether people are perhaps suffering from a bit of Brexit fatigue from outside?
I think we've seen a lot of interest generated in the sense that what we're trying to do with the centre is to not just get bogged down in negative news, of which, you know, people can find negative news, but to actually try and understand the implications of the vote in terms of, you know, what can we proactively do about it?
Yeah.
And so in, you know, coming back to my point about, you know, trying to help government and industry in terms of understanding the issues, you know, we've seen quite a fair bit of interest in that regard.
Excellent. Alex, really appreciate you taking time out to talk to us today.
As always, thanks for listening. And if you enjoyed the show, please subscribe to us on your podcast platform of choice so you'll be notified whenever we upload a new episode and you'll be able to tune in. In the meantime, you can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at @brexitpodcast. The show is produced by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming, and Warren Paul, and our theme song is Cool Vibes by Kevin McLeod.